Music pioneer Megadeth's Dave Mustaine has always been an innovator, breaking musical boundaries and leading the way to his own unique blend of symphonic thrash metal. So it's no surprise that Dave and his equally as creative family have incorporated that intrepid spirit into a family business they call the House of Mustaine, combining music and culture into the art of fine winemaking. Basically, music to your mouth. We were fortunate to be invited into their beautiful home in Tennessee recently to hear all about it, get a fabulous tour, and of course, get the scoop on the latest Megadeth news. This is a Life Minute with the mighty Mustaine family.
All right, guys, I have to say, I was not prepared for this house. We are at the House of Mustaine with the Mustaines. Thanks for joining us on Life Minute.
Absolutely.
Walked in here and this house wasn't ready for this. I know we're talking about wine, we're talking about music, we're talking about life, but this house is insane. And I hear it's your baby.
It's what I do when he's on the road. Yes.
Note to self, don't tour anymore.
It's just absolutely gorgeous.
Thank you.
How are you guys?
Busy, but loving every minute of it, yeah. I would say.
I don't think we'd have it any other way. We don't do nothing very well, so.
I think we're used to just a constant flow, and then when that's out of sync, we're like, we don't know what to do with ourselves. But it's been great. It's been a good journey, especially with the wines.
Yeah. Entertainers, entrepreneurs, evangelists.
That's us.
That's well said.
So tell us about House of Mustaine, the wine. Like, how does a metal god like get a wine business? How does that get going?
Well, it started with him doing something out of the ordinary. And he ended up doing a symphony in San Diego about 11 years ago? 11, 12?
13.
Okay, that's his number, of course. It has to be 13.
It was in 2012, so do the math. Yeah, because
the
wine came out. The wine came out in 2012.
But
it doesn't matter, I'm not going to argue.
We needed a social lubricant for sure, because it was season ticket holders and Megadeth fans.
I was talking to somebody about classical music, and they said, yeah, they're great. And I said, you know what, the guitar players today, if they knew how to play violin, or if the greats from the past didn't play violin and they played guitar, they'd be the same. They'd be the same. And I said, I could do that. And inside I was going like, what did you just say? So then it became a challenge, and the San Diego Symphony had been run by a guy that I was friends with. He was an MMA guy, and his mom was one of the executives down in San Diego. So the concert happened with me. We did Vivaldi, Bach, and Wagner, and it was challenging because I'm self-taught, so I had to go count the strings and count the notes and, you know, I was going crazy trying to learn Vivaldi because he's such a great. And through all that stuff, we said, we need something to blend our fans together with the subscribers to the symphony. Because, you know, people have those memberships. And long story boring, we said we need something to help everybody get some social lubricant. I thought, well, you know, we don't really want beer, and we don't really want hard liquor, and we decided, since we lived in the wine country in Fallbrook, to do wine. And Pam and I had a friend who took us to a nearby vineyard that was right on the other side of the hill we lived on, and we started tasting it, and it was fun, and we had no idea, because I hate to taste the booze. If I drink, and it's like, you know, that's not me. If I take a sip of something, it's like, ooh, that's nice. That is a good wine. That's a good blend. That's a good winemaker. And we had a good winemaker there. The first one. Sold out in 24 hours, which was pretty big accomplishment for somebody who's never sold wine, never made wine, barely drinks wine.
And it crashed their site, so we had some things to figure out.
And the rest was history. We decided we were going to go into doing this. It took a while. Elektra was still pursuing her music career, so she wasn't involved at that point. But something clicked inside her, and she's been going full bore on this now. And she's our vice president, and and a sommelier, I think, one of the youngest, if not the youngest, female sommeliers in the world.
Not one of the youngest anymore. When I did pass, I was definitely one of the youngest in America, I would say, female.
Amazing.
When you think of sommeliers, you usually think of old men with skirts and a spoon on his lap, you know.
Tray. It's like yeah, amazing. And so you're loving it too, Elektra? Like, did you ever know you'd be doing this? Or?
No, I remember I was 15 and we were helping to pack the first wine in the boxes to take them to the symphony. I had so much fun, but it wasn't until we kind of did like a relaunch where I saw how much she loved it. And I had a bit of know-how, at least from the marketing side and just from doing my own career in music, of how to maybe do a little rebrand and a relaunch. So I wanted to help her do that. And then I accidentally fell in love with it. And
accidentally.
You could not ask me to do anything else now.
It's beautiful. It's amazing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I needed help. It was not easy. Just
it's too much for one person.
For one, yeah. I had a team out in California, but when she joined me, it just took it to where it needed to go.
Yeah, that's awesome. Awesome. And Pam, you were saying before that you're kind of out of the spotlight. And these guys are like, you know, the entertainers.
They're the entertainers in the family. Yes.
So I guess that dynamic just kind of works.
Yeah.
I love how close you are. You guys are like, it's just so evident. And it's rare, especially in this business,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. We have a really good time. We're a little wild and
we get each other.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean it's always smooth, but that's family.
True.
And we get each other and that's our usual.
That's so cool.
Justice is involved in this too. Our son, but because he's in the entertainment business, he's kind of a heavy hitter, and the girls don't use him unless they need some manpower.
Yeah.
Not to be mansplaining, but he's got stuff that we, you know, the three of us don't have, he adds. So while he's not packing or designing, Elektra also designs the labels. We use song titles for my career. It really is a family thing. All of us are doing it. I think even Justice's wife has helped us too. So
we all pitch in. He runs Megadeth, so he's got a big job. But they merge together in a lot of ways because it's the entertainment business, and we've learned a lot actually from the entertainment business that we do use with the wine business.
I bet the good, the bad, and the other.
Justice has a good way of bridging the two worlds. He mainly is in the Megadeth world, but he has a way of seeing angles of how they can come together.
Right.
And he really understands the fans, whereas us two, I think, we understand more the wine, and those two boys understand the fans.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit more about the wine. Like, what's your favorite? And
we
you make all the
rides. We know the one
we
that
know
is our
which
favorite.
One we're gonna say. And I have not really ever been truly fond of the sparkling reds, but this one just stole my heart. I thought it was hers in the beginning.
So we have a wine called Vernaccia from San Genesio. It's a DOP. We fell in love with this wine. I initially tasted it and said, can we name this Elektra? Because if I could be a wine, I would want to be this one. And it happens to be one of the rarest in the world, just being that there's only 27 acres that have these grapes growing and that they are produced from. It's the smallest DOP in our region. DOP is a certification of like a designated area, protected zone. But it's a sparkling red wine. It's a touch sweet, which typically sweet wines have a connotation to them to some people.
Stigmatism.
But this is something that happens naturally. So what we do is we'll harvest half of the grapes, make the cuvée, and then we'll leave another half on the vines to compound their sweetness. So they'll kind of, they'll stay on longer. They'll almost raisin-like, I would say. And then we'll harvest those and blend them all together, ferment it twice. And now you have this excellent semi-sweet wine that's just so unique.
Everything.
All our Italian wines are organic, sustainable, very low intervention. We try to do it how the Benedictine monks did it, who founded our vineyard. And we took an oath, actually, when we got there, which was in Italian, but it meant to preserve all that is beautiful. And so that is part of our organic practices, why we do things by hand. We're thinking of the next vintage. We're thinking of the culture, sustainability. We even leave every four rows, we'll leave one vine unharvested for the animals, because you're taking a part of the ecosystem. So we feed the bird, you know, the birds come and the animals get a little bit.
And we also got to see the books that the monks had used on that land for years. I mean, hundreds
of years. It's a secret.
They keep referring to this monk stuff and the Benedictine monk stuff. So evidently the vineyards where we're at is 1,200 years old. They had either planted it or had someone plant it. So that's what we're talking about.
Right. And where is it exactly?
So this is in Le Marche. It's the central east coast of Italy, so facing the Adriatic Sea, very close to the sea, probably 5-8 minutes away.
Where all the best wines are.
Yes, and we actually just secured our next plot. We're always thinking, it's funny, we always are expanding, and it just kind of comes our way, and we're like, say yes. So we found another plot that we actually are going to be designing, evidently, the next winery. A place for us to stay out there, and then we're going to be planting in a couple weeks a new very extreme type of planting of our Montepulciano and our Pecorino.
And a place where we could bring our wine club members so they can enjoy it too.
And it happens to be in a blue zone, which is crazy. We found out there's other little, it's Zona Blues, and everything is just pure high quality, and it's on a cliff facing the ocean, and we're like, who wouldn't want to have wine here? A blue zone is just a pocket of the world where the locals that live there, there's different elements that probably play into it, but it has the highest capacity of centurions that live there, people living over 100. It's just known for longevity, so you know they have something that we don't know about.
Yes, yes. The Italians do.
So if I want to drink wine, I want to drink wine from a place like that.
Right. That's amazing. Amazing. I can't believe how educated you are about it.
We also had found an Etruscan tomb on our property. When we were doing
We just closed on the property, and they called us, and they said, by the way, I'm thinking, thank God we just closed on it. By the way, they were digging, and they discovered an Etruscan tomb from 700 BC. So now this site is a UNESCO World Heritage Site.
Yeah, and we had to stop everything while the government came in and decided. And I
said,
her,
did they take the tomb? I don't know that I want a tomb.
No,
on
I said,
the
unless it's Jesus Christ, we're good.
Yeah. They took
but
it
they
to
did
a museum,
take it and put it in the museum.
So I can sleep at night.
Yeah, it was wild.
Oh,
it's
my God.
Beautiful.
We need to be out there filming. This needs to be like a long documentary. I just can't. And then what does it sell?
We have essentially two outlets right now, online and then in Nashville, just because we're locals here. So at the moment, we mainly focus on our wine club. So a lot of our wines we keep members only for our club members, which is essentially, you know, just a commitment to the wines in general. There's no fees or anything. We just want them to be part of a community with us, you know, enjoy the wines on a regular basis. And then we curate experiences for that. We have a few that we have on our website that people can try before they decide, and then we go into select restaurant partners here in Nashville so far, which we just did an event last night. Excellent cuisine. So we kind of try to focus on events, things like that, and then mainly online wine club.
How many different varietals do you have?
I think we're at 10 now. Yes.
All right, so it's very small, nice.
We'll keep going because that's what we do, but
we have a few sparklings, a champagne, whites, reds.
And are they really all Megadeth song names or album names? Did you get your Electra?
I haven't yet.
You kept that one.
It's in my master scheme. Eventually, I'll convince them.
Each family member will probably do one that reminds us of what we would be if we were a wine.
And do the Megadeth fans? Are there a lot of Megadeth fans that are in the club? Was it the social?
There really are.
What it was going for?
From the beginning.
Yeah.
They've been a huge support. Obviously, they were the first that really jumped in with us, and it's been really awesome to see. So we just had some of them there last night, and we're starting to recognize faces and their story, and it's been fun getting to know them.
And recently just added the travel experiences, so hopefully we see some of the wine club people.
Tell us about that.
The travel experiences are things that we would want to do ourselves, so we just want to bring people along. But one of them is the Orient Express. We've got the Belmont train in London. That's a murder mystery experience. Yeah.
So this is high-end stuff.
We did one that was an elephant sanctuary over in Thailand. So it's just stuff that we would
join this.
Essentially, the membership would have we have like a club concierge, and she puts together travel experiences, because that's our background. We're not generational winemakers yet. We do know travel from him being on tour, and we've gone all the time. So we're like, how do we bring people along in this life that we got to live and give recommendations? We have people ask us all the time, like, where do we go when we go to London? Where do we eat? What do we do? Right. So we were like, how do we put that all together? Because wine is essentially, it's very similar to that whole world.
Yeah.
It's very regional oriented. So we decided, you know what, let's put together kind of like bucket list style stuff, because that's what we love. So this year we released a few of those, and we're excited to see people on it.
That's great. And you know what I love, that, you know, you don't necessarily maybe would think of Megadeth fans like to be wine connoisseurs, but that's not true, is it?
Definitely not what we've seen.
I think that's because on the outside, most people, when they think of a band called Megadeth, they think that it's going to be screamo music, and we appeal to all walks of life. I remember meeting a neonatal cardiologist who did surgery on babies while the mom was still pregnant, and he came up and he goes, yeah, I listen to Megadeth while I do surgeries. And I thought,
kidding,
not if you're doing something on my kids, you're not. So
that's amazing.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, my wine that I like is the Shiraz.
That was Blood of Heroes.
That was one of our first.
Yeah. I like the Shiraz.
I'd like to bring that back. I don't know about
it's
you.
It's possible.
She's the visionary. I run it all past her, but
we work well together. She makes things happen.
What's that one called, the Shiraz?
That was Blood of Heroes. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That was a
nice one.
2017.
That was our first one.
How much? Tell me all the names. Can you tell me all the names?
Currently, we have Elysian Fields, two She-Wolves, a Rosado and a Tempranillo Rosé, Wanderlust Pecorino, Vernaccia, a Tout Le Monde, Holy Wars, Peace Cells, Almost Honest. They're like our children.
I love it.
We have several others coming out too, which I can't disclose, but
The one we just made last year. We actually get in the first, we brought two Italian Garbellatas over. And that was our first.
It's a huge wooden fermentation.
Like
bath.
Lucy, like on Lucy, where she's
it's
in
like
it.
It's like a barrel.
That was us. Yeah. We were in it.
Like that.
Yeah, and somebody, a friend of mine in winemaking had told me that you got to be careful. And I used to see him in there with straps, and I thought, that is so weird.
And they're foot stomping.
Yeah.
These guys in like the nicest wineries in Tuscany.
And we were
so
in
it
there.
They do it.
Doing it.
For real.
Yeah. Yeah, I just like that. But then there's a gas too that it gives off, and I didn't really take him serious. So I come back and I'm flat out. I thought I was drugged.
The must out.
And I was so close to it,
I'm like, she's down there for a little while.
Maybe I didn't need it. Maybe I did need straps on. Or
maybe, yeah.
I should
you
try
are
that
hands on.
Time.
No doubt about it. I mean, it's really
we are used to just, getting dirty just from.
It's been fun.
Being equestrians for most of our life, so it all goes together.
How did you guys meet?
Pam and I?
Yeah.
Well, I was helping somebody that had just gotten sober, and he was working with the band, and he was afraid if he went out and worked that he might slip. So I went to this place and was helping. You know, they got a name for that stuff in the 12-step programs. I was not sponsoring him, but I was just, you know, being support. I was in there with guys from my band, and I look across this venue, and I see her with her girlfriends playing. And I said to my friend, Juan, go tell that girl I want to meet her. So he goes over there, and he was dark-skinned and had enormous teeth. So he smiled, and I went, okay, that's a good sign, or maybe a bad sign. And he came back and he said, she said if you want to meet her, you need to go over there yourself. And I thought, all right, well, that's kind of spicy. And I went over there and I said, hi, I'm Dave. I know who you are. Okay, well, I'll be leaving. And I told her, I said, look, I'm here with my friend. I got to go. And I'd really like to take you out to lunch. And I left. And I guess that made a very odd impression on her, and we started dating, and we got married shortly after that, and then about a half a year later, we got pregnant, and then 6 years later, we were in Paris, and we got pregnant again with this one. yeah, it was. It's been really great. All these little steps along the way, how these things happen. You know, when I met her parents, her mom was still alive and her stepfather was alive, and I met her brother. I really liked the family, so it just seemed like, you know, this might work. You know, we broke up for a while too, so I forced myself to break up with her so that I would know if I could live without her. And I went to Hawaii and I was miserable. I was so miserable because I missed her and I knew I was falling for her. I got back from Hawaii with my bodyguard at the time and we started dating again. And the rest is history. We went back to Hawaii. I had a concert I had to do there and I invited her and her family and all my family and she didn't know.
No, I didn't.
Thankfully, she wasn't paying very close attention at the time. And I had secretly bought a nice diamond for her. We got married at the base of Punch Bowl, Diamond Head, the big volcano in Hawaii. We were on the side of the water. We were in the grass. It was beautiful. All our families were there, and the rest is history. The problem was trying to find a wedding dress for someone like her in an island like Hawaii, where most people are a little bit different sizes. You don't find a lot of really waif-like women in some places. You know, they don't have real tiny outfits and stuff. And the only thing that surpassed her trying to find something to fit her was what I had to wear. It looked like it was a suit made out of Reynolds Wrap aluminum foil. It was shiny, and it was the only thing that fit me. And I looked like I could have been the Tin Man from The Wizard of Oz because it was so reflective.
We had 4 days to do it, and then he was back on the road. So it was real quick. And then we had our reception, I think it was a month later when we got back.
Oh. So what did you wear?
So I found a dress.
It was pretty,
thankfully,
too.
Yeah. My brother walked me down the aisle, and he had secretly brought out my whole family, including my 98-year-old grandmother.
Aww. Before he even asked you, right, to marry him?
Well, I had no idea.
Didn't ask her yet.
Yeah, so he came up and he showed up at the hotel room and he said, "What are you doing?" I think he said this Thursday, and I started boiling, like from my feet all the way up to my head, like, "What do you mean? You asked me to come out here and I'm just supposed to know what I'm doing this week, like I'm on my own?" And then he can read me so well, so he knew, and he quick then got down on his knees and posed the question. And
knee, not knees.
On your knee, yeah, so I had to quick just cool down a little bit and focus on what was going on, because I had no idea.
How many years ago was that? How long have you been married?
33.
Wow, beautiful. Another thing that's rare, you know?
Yeah, very, very much
so. Love it.
We've seen all the seasons.
All right, let's talk a little Megadeth. What's new with Megadeth?
We just finished the world tour at the end of last year, and it was one of our probably funnest tours for a long time. Just things were just clicking. You know, we changed our management. I was very, very, very unhappy. And we hired a management company to help us do branding, not manage us. It was just such a big difference between the two parties that I left one and went to the other, and now the guys that were doing the branding are doing everything. And it's time right now, we're making a new record. It's my 17th record. I've got over 200 songs, so they're gonna have a lot of bottles of wine. They'll have enough names to last a couple generations, so.
I started asking you to have the wines in mind when you're writing the songs, which is very backwards.
Well, if you look
but
at
I'm like,
the
I need
record,
something that passes legally that we can use.
If you look at the new record and it says Electron there, you know what happens.
Yeah, we got to get them
passed. She deserves it.
The TTB, you guys. So we've got to have some names that'll pass.
What is TTB?
I was going to say.
It's like the government board that decides if the name is okay to be on a bottle. There's certain things you can
really?
Say.
Oh, wow, really? Interesting.
I'm like, I don't know if this is going to pass. Some of the morbid titles.
Yeah.
Holy Wars passed.
Yeah, Holy Wars.
Holy War passed.
Blood of Heroes.
Definitely passed.
Yeah.
But yeah.
What's your all favorite Megadeth song?
Train of Consequences, maybe?
That's one of my favorite, too. And isn't that 30 years, that album, right? It has a 30-year anniversary?
Which one? Train of Consequences? That was on Euthanasia.
Euthanasia,
that was in 1994, so that's 30
years.
30 years
old soon, right?
Yeah.
Well, I am responsible for world premiering that at WWOR TV Channel 9. I was assistant to the news director. It was this hard news, local, but it was a national news, hard news show. And I loved music, and my boss, I was young at the time, says, you know, I'm going to make you responsible for premiering world premiere videos. I know you love music. They'll run at the end of the show, at the very end. And I did Train of Consequences with that's the right one, with the babies on the hanger, and it did not go well for me. I got in trouble.
I bet.
But I loved it. It was like the best thing. I can say that I world premiered that video. I worked with, I guess it was Capitol, whoever was the label at the time.
Isn't that something?
30 years later, here I am.
We're all here still.
The baby idea came from Hugh Syme, who was a photographer, artist. And if you remember back at in that period in the 90s, Jack Kevorkian was very, very prominent in the news for assisted suicide. I thought, God, you know, this is so insane. People should have the right to terminate their life if they have an inoperable disease and they're suffering. Man, you know, I don't think that that's fair to keep them in their suffering, because I've been through a lot with my cancer and with other things that I've had from my work. So that's a whole nother story.
How are you doing?
With the cancer?
Yeah.
I've been in remission for 5 years, but, you know, you never know. So I take care of myself. I make sure and drink a lot and do a lot of drugs, and I'm just kidding. I see my doctors regularly, and for my age, I take pretty good care of myself. Guys my age usually don't stay this active. You know, there's a new generation of men that are staying active. The generation I come from, guys get my age, they start getting fat and bald.
Yeah, you definitely still have the hair.
Yeah,
you're good.
Did you all tell me what your favorite song was? Yours was Train of Consequences.
Yeah.
What about yours, Pam and Dave? Do you have a favorite?
I would say Trust would be mine. I like the melodies in it.
I don't have a favorite song.
You have a favorite to play live, or not really?
No, I don't have a favorite song. They're all like my babies. So there are songs that I don't like as much as the other ones, but those will remain a secret, because I don't like giving energy into something that I'm not happy with. I'm a Virgo. So it kind of just comes with the territory, but a song will let the writer know when it's done, if he's a good writer. You know, some people, when they're writing songs, they stop too soon or they go too far, and you got to know when to stop. That's a very unique talent that a lot of musicians do not possess. And you wonder why they don't make it. It's, well, you know, you probably should listen more to the bands that you really like and study arrangement. You know, that's another art that people don't know very well in bands, is arranging stuff.
Well, you know it. And I was thinking of this earlier, too, and it's interesting how you started the Wine with the symphony. You really started that, too. Like, I think, like, Metallica gets a lot of credit for doing a concert with a symphony as... Do you agree with that? You know, like, I was thinking that on the way here.
That's different.
But you did it way before.
That's different. They did it. They did their songs with the symphony, which is no large feat, you know.
Yes.
I
but it was also years later. But just the idea of mixing all of that. Like, you did that before anybody was doing it. Not just them, but anybody was doing it, you know.
Yeah. I would say he's pioneered a lot. That's kind of who he is, though. He'll go where no one's been yet. He goes there.
All right, so you were telling me before, you kind of stay not in the spotlight, and that's why it all works.
Yeah, I mean, from the beginning, I'm not the one to be in the spotlight. I'm shy, so it's never been my desire, and I think that's helped a lot. We've got two entertainers in the family, which would be Elektra and Dave, and Justice and I. Like the business side of everything, and the strategy and the ideas. So we're more similar and don't care to be in the spotlight as much. But they are really good at being in the spotlight.
Yeah.
So
yeah, because Elektra, you had a music career as well. Talented with that too.
I did.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. But now Wine took you over.
Yeah. It won my heart. I never thought I would end up doing it, but there was just something about agriculture that's totally opposite of the music industry in a way. I felt like it just fed my soul at the time.
The grapes do not try to rip you off.
It's very grounding too, and just being outside. We've ridden horses our whole life, so we're outside, and it just feels good. And being out in the vineyards is just a complete joy.
It was interesting because music, you're the product, but now we have a product that we get to like harness its story and that we believe in and stand behind, and just felt good in a way for it not to be me, but something that we believed in and we loved, that now I have to go out and do sales, which I never thought I would be doing, to some of these restaurants. And time again, thank God I was in the music industry, because you get the door slammed in your face a lot, so you have to have fortitude. Mm-hmm. But I know that I know that I know that the wine is excellent, and so if they say no, it's on to the next.
Yeah, if you love something and believe in it, it's not sales anymore. You're just passionate about it.
It was no longer me being the product, but now it was something that was like my kid that I believe
in. We're not really in control either, so every year it's a new harvest, and it's so exciting. You get to see what happened this last year and try it and compare it.
It's very dependent on nature.
Yeah.
And it's unlike beer. Beer is a recipe. This is not a recipe. So it's endlessly fascinating.
Changes.
Yeah. When I became a sommelier, I finished my course, and I literally thought I knew. And after I finished my course, I realized I know nothing. And it was very exciting because I love a challenge, and I want to keep going. And wine is just that way. Whenever you think you know, you realize you just tapped into the next layer.
Behind the mountain are more mountains.
We've had to adapt to a lot just by going over to Italy. But we go into regions and she picks it up real fast, so that's super helpful for me. But when we went over there, we were just two women. We ended up in some dry lakes. We ended up in the hotel that we had a chain barred against, so we couldn't get out. We were in castle towns that were so ancient the car wouldn't fit. So we had all these little hurdles in the beginning.
So many stories.
So many.
It was like a reality show. We're
that
like,
part,
what
yes.
are we doing here? But that's part of being in a new place. And I always say this, with what he did and why we went to the Marche instead of Tuscany or a typical region, was his spirit is, I think we share, all of us as Mustaines, but I mean, he became known for pioneering a whole new genre and then becoming one of the best in the world at it. And so we decided we wanted to do that in wine, which didn't mean going to the predictable place, but going somewhere which had authenticity and rich culture that we felt like we could really have a story and deserve to be heard. Kind of like a opening act, you said, that nobody's heard before. You feel like you found the one. So that's how we feel.
It's my band.
Yeah.
Indies.
I love it. It's beautiful. I love you guys. You're awesome.
No,
thank you so
thank
much.
You.
It's so good.
Thanks for being here.
I have a music one. What does music do for people? I always have to ask.
Well, it depends. It's if you believe all of the colloquies about music, you know, there's all kinds of sayings and stuff. The one that comes to mind first with your question is music soothes the savage beast. And I don't know who coined that phrase, but it's pretty accurate, depending on the type of music. Now, if you play modern metal with the guys that can't sing and they do the screaming bit, you know, that's really understandable to me because they can't sing. And they're making the best of what they can do, which usually is really poor vocal performances. Just like there was a period in 2000 where we had these bands called, I think it was nu metal, and they didn't do any solos. Why didn't they do any solos? Because they sucked. They couldn't do solos. And thank God that genre went away. People started to learn how to do solos. I would say, you know, if you're in a nu metal band, you probably would be challenged even playing Johnny B. Goode. You know, so glad that went away.
Any band you particularly like right now?
That I like?
Yeah.
I like some of the older music because new stuff, I mean, all the good chords are taken And if you think back when I started 40 years ago, the music playing field didn't have millions of kids sitting at home doing guitar riffs into their computer and they're posting it online. There's good and bad with everything. And when people do things, you know, for their own art, that's great. But when you start seeing these manufactured records that band members didn't play on, that's fraud. So, you know, I like bands that really play what they do. One of my favorite guitar players is one of the simplest guys in the world. It's the guy from Pink Floyd, David Gilmour. He could do more with one note than some of the guys playing nowadays can do with 12. And it's just a matter of, you know, feeling. The guitar, you're touching it. So it's an extension of your spirit, your soul. And how you make it sound, if it's like squank, crunch, crunch, that kind of stuff, well, you probably haven't bonded with the instrument yet. You know, playing a violin. Violin has got to be one of the most dreadful sounds ever when you're learning it.
Nope, probably, I strongly disagree.
Probably.
Oh, when you're learning it. Okay, good. I'm like, this is my favorite instrument.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, it's because the sound of it and rosining the bow and all that stuff and almost as bad as having someone practice on a wind instrument, like a sax or a clarinet, you know.
Awesome. To see more of this interview, visit our website, lifeminute.tv. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast, Life Minute TV.